the Center for Science Outreach, and I want to thank you for downloading this episode of Snacks for the Brain. We're truly grateful for your interest in what we're doing to bring the joy of research and discovery to K-12 students and teachers the whole world over. If you're not in either of these categories, maybe you're just an interesting person who's interested in the world. In any case, welcome. Bi-weekly or so, we'll share some fun, independent, pod-safe music. We'll interview some working research scientists, students, or leading proponents of educational change. And we'll toss in an educational sound-seeing tour or computer tip.
For you, we'll be right here.
At blogs.vanderbilt.edu/S4TheB and at the CSO website at scienceoutreach.org, sharing good brain munchies with you.
You.
So listen up, let's get right down to it with episode number
67
of Snacks for the Brain.
Snacks for the Brain.
Howdy, I'm sitting in the little conference room at 805 Light Hall in the Vanderbilt University Medical Center, doing a little post-production on a digital audio file I recorded on my Dell Axon Pocket PC just this morning. It's a brief but fun chat with three of the most talented young people I know, each a PhD in a challenging field of science and, collectively, the faculty of the School for Science and Math at Vanderbilt. You can learn more about the school by visiting its website at http://theschool.vanderbilt.edu. I can also tell you more right now by reading just a little snippet from a very nifty new trifold prospectus I'm holding in my hand.
To wit.
The School for Science and Math at Vanderbilt is a 4-year part-time high school led by dedicated PhD scientist instructors. From the onset, students immerse themselves in the university culture and ultimately work side by side with research faculty and scientists in training. Honors credit will be given upon successful completion of each of the 7 courses. All high school coursework missed while attending the School for Science and Math at Vanderbilt must be completed per Metro Nashville Public Schools system requirements. Vanderbilt and MNPS will provide support to every student to ensure success in their traditional MNPS education.
Are you up for the challenge?
The prospectus continues. There are some great pictures of highly engaged learners in this little pamphlet, too. I also have a little inside scoop to share. There's a brief video promo in the works, and judging from the draft I saw this morning, it's going to do a great job of sharing what the school does. What I want to share with you today, though, is the exuberance and excitement these three key players in this project bring to their everyday work. Along with their extensive amalgam of experience, they also bring enthusiasm and a sense of humor to the unique weekly experiences of their lucky charges. Their names are Dr. Kimberly McHugh, Dr. Angela Eads, and Dr. Chris Vonigs. I'll start off with some electronica music from Magnatune.com, a frisky piece called Entry from the Slovakian artist Cargo Cult.
Listen up!
Why?
won't publish it.
Like a lot of this, probably. And I guess we can just talk in normal voices, because this will pick it up. It's a pretty good little device. Of course, it's a $700 PC.
Better be good.
I've had it for several years. It's done me well. I guess what we want to talk about is just how do you think the first semester went, and I'm going to do a little brief intro in the podcast about the school out of this and out of the website and just talk about it a little bit. And in the show, I'll play some music too, so I want to know what kind of music you guys would like to have. what kind of music do you like?
Well, I think part of the point is what kind of music will the audience like?
No, not really.
It's about us.
What I use for the podcast is the PodSafe Music Network and a place called Magnatune, and both of them have Magnatune especially has all kinds of has classical music, has jazz, it has new age, it has folk, you know, electronica, pretty much anything you like. So
I wonder.
You know what, Scott? We have because I do a soundtrack every day. Mm-hmm. I've got them all saved on iTunes as playlists. So
a soundtrack of the class?
For every class.
So on every day,
about an hour worth
of
music that goes with, like, that relates to the
we
topic
have
of
yeah,
that day.
Yeah. But, well, the issue is that I need to have music that's not copyrighted.
Right. Yeah. Well,
to broadcast. So that's why I use those two services. They're all independent musicians who are not affiliated with BMI or ASCAP or
right.
Those guys. So it's PodSafe Music. So, and that's part of the edge too, I guess, is to try to introduce people to other kinds of music. So
mm-hmm.
May work, may not.
Well, I mean, having him say that, you know, we have these playlists for our class. I mean, the list, the music has gone from classical to pop to new age to whatever.
Folk.
You know.
Folk.
So
any ska in there?
Yeah, ska in there, yeah. We played the guitar.
Why do you do that?
Why?
Yeah.
To get the kids jazzed about the day and just 8 o'clock's pretty early to come in. Half of them are sleeping out in the foyer when we go get them, so we want them to be awake and excited about the day when they come in.
So you pump them up with the soundtrack?
Yeah.
I think that's a good tack myself.
Yeah, I mean, it's something different, too. I mean, they don't get that when they walk into their classes at their regular school. At least we don't think so.
One would assume that's not the case in the public school.
Yeah.
I guess we should. We'll skip that topic. Well, you know, from my perspective, I come in on Mondays off and on, and what I see going on is you guys working really hard with a really bright group of kids.
They're very bright, and they keep us on our toes. We do work very hard because they're here with us 6.5 hours, content hours we have to fill. And
which by the way, point is that many more content hours than they have in their public school day, even if they were coming from a private school. I can tell you right now there's probably 3.5 to 4 hours content in the school day. So you got more than your average bear, because they've got transitions between classes that
right.
you guys don't really have.
Right,
and you have
exactly.
to kind of invent those. But
yeah.
That's an interesting challenge.
I never thought about that. But it's even funny because it's hard to get all the content we want to get into those 6.5 hours. We're really...
Oh, well, that's the other perspective,
you know.
Is that you have one day a week.
Yeah,
right.
We always have more to do than we have time to do. It's always a struggle on how much we show them and then how much we can get in depth with a single topic. Because there's some labs that we could probably spend all day on if we wanted to.
Right.
And really make it a really meaningful experience. But we want, and each Monday, since it's interdisciplinary, to broaden their horizons, think about a topic from many different levels. The 6.5 hours goes by fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm loving the construction next door, by the way. We're getting probably going to have some of that sound.
Oh, we should go into our office. We're going to get some of that.
That's just progress at work right now.
Our wall almost fell down yesterday.
Is that the new, is that going to be the School for Science and Math space? Or I understand that we're moving.
We are moving. We think we know where we're moving, but it may be up in the air still. but we will not be in Light Hall,
mm-hmm.
as far as we know. It'll be bigger and better as far as we are.
How has this lab worked for you this year so far? Is it working? Is it,
it
enough
works.
To work with?
It's not ideal,
mm-hmm.
but we've made it work.
I think we've made it for our lack of space with having some cool equipment.
And we're in the sort of refurbished, we're sitting here now in the sort of refurbished lab of a former Nobel Prize winner, Dr. Stanley Cohen, I guess, who came to visit the school?
He did, and he was a big hit. He really enjoyed interacting with the students. I mean, he was smiling, he was dynamic. You could tell he really loves the work that he did and the work that he does and communicating that. And not only did he come and talk with the kids in our class space, but then we all went to lunch and
He
was seated with the students and they got a chance to go up and talk to him one-on-one and ask him questions. And I think probably the one thing that the students walked away with, like his take-home message that they all glommed onto, was he said, find what it is that you love and then do that thing that you love.
So we're going to lose a student to Clown College.
I won't ask you to name that student.
Don't put that on.
Actually, that'll be a good feature. I work with a guy who does a beer podcast. He's always, in the course of the interview, saying, I'll edit that out. And he never does.
Great.
And, I mean, we've had a lot of other people besides the Nobel laureate come to the class,
mm-hmm.
or that we've been able to go to them. And I think that's part of the uniqueness and the value in this program and being on the Vanderbilt campus is that we have that immediate access to these PIs, these researchers, who are doing the science. You know, so we've had someone who works on malaria, studying mosquitoes. And we've talked with people who study worms in order to understand the nervous system of humans better. And one of the things about that our students really loved is that in order to visualize the nervous system of these worms, they insert genes for fluorescing proteins so they can make the worms glow in the dark.
Nice.
Yeah, which the students think is really cool. But then subsequently, we did that here in class, and we inserted the same gene. We just put it into bacteria so they can make bacteria glow in the dark. So we translate things that they're learning that these, you know, high-powered scientists are doing and show them that they can do it too.
Well, and Angela mentioned that balance of showing them and having them do. And that's a big recurring, it's swinging back around, a recurring controversy in education in general is the hands-on and discovery learning as opposed to top-down lecture.
Right.
And it's swinging back around now, I see, in the literature that education has suffered, the performance of our kids has suffered, through an overzealous approach to hands-on.
Yeah, I think we have a pretty good balance of doing the two. I mean, we present core lessons in the day and then use the hands-on activities to reinforce those core mm-hmm. lessons, so to give them an idea of the tangibles of that core lesson. So I think it works because we do both, because we
right.
have some sort of mix between the two and make them work together.
Because you can definitely lose the whole point of things if all they're doing constantly is, you know, mixing solution A with solution B, and you see a color change or, you know, whatever it is, and they don't understand why,
mm-hmm.
why they're doing it, why it works, what their question really is, what they're discovering. If it's just a bunch of smoke and mirrors and flash, that's not learning, that's playing. And we want it to be fun, we want it to be engaging, but they need to understand what's going on behind it.
And there's certainly something to be said for playing, but again, there's that balance. And, you know, you've probably got some playing going on, but you don't want it to be the driving descriptor of a classroom methodology.
Well, we play games.
I see you play games. I've seen some of that.
Angela, why don't you talk about games we play?
I was waiting for Alex Trebek, a.k.a. Monic, to tell us about the Jeopardy that we play. We play Jeopardy with classroom clickers, personal response systems, in order to gauge students' understandings of a lesson before the lesson is done, so it's kind of as a pretest. We've also used Jeopardy as
like a post-test or a way to test what they've learned throughout the day. And Jeopardy is always fun. We throw in some fun questions, and from time to time we have Jeopardy with prizes at the end to inspire some friendly competition, but also for them to pay attention and get the answers right.
I was here, I think, for the very first Jeopardy exercise, and it was a little rough in my recollection.
Oh, no, you were here for number two. Okay. That's the problem. Number one went so good, we invited everybody to number two, and number two bombed because
that's one of Murphy's laws, I think.
Yeah, well, we were still working
on that.
They
figured out the glitches in the system.
Exactly.
Or they figured out how
they
to get around.
They found the loopholes, and so like, they were all holding down. Maybe the first thing. So since then, we've severely penalized wrong answers, and so.
There's a place in the world for penalty, too.
Right.
What's the best thing that you've done this semester?
As a resident hydrologist, my favorite thing is playing in the stream.
Playing in the stream. That's right. Yeah, I went out for that one. It's something I did with third graders back in 1996 or so. The same stream.
Oh, yeah.
What did they find?
We didn't have as... The equipment we had wasn't there next year. They found all kinds of macroinvertebrates, and it seems to me, as I recall, that there was a lot more active, larger life in those streams. But it could have been at the time of year, too.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Seems to me we did it in the springtime.
You know, I think looking at it very broadly, what we've done is something that we truly set out to do, which is to build a sense of community with these students. They're coming from multiple high schools across Nashville.
Nine different high schools.
Different high schools. And for one day a week, here they are all together. And so in the beginning, there's the students from high school X and then the students from high school Y, and they sort of segregate. But I think over time, as we've tried to emphasize, that we are a collaborative group and we are learning all from each other, and that here, we are the School for Science and Math at Vanderbilt, they've taken that on and they've become a more cohesive group. And I think some of that segregation that was happening has started to break down some. It's still, you know, it's not totally gone. Mm-hmm. And they're taking ownership of the school.
That's important. That's a good start, especially since the freshmen are the ones who ideally will be here 4 years running.
Right.
It's a 4-year commitment. Have you had any attrition so far?
We have. Actually, in the second week, we lost one student, and she just decided it was not for her, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the first semester, there was one student who, again, decided that this really, really wasn't for him.
Now, will you replace that one, or... And did
As
you replace the first one?
The first one we did replace because mm-hmm. it was very early
it's
in the semester.
Waiting list sort of thing?
Right.
Okay.
And the second one, for the time being, we will not replace.
Well, cool. It's just neat stuff.
Yeah, it's a good time. It was weird. Today's a Monday, and the students are usually here on Mondays.
Do you feel lonely today?
Yeah. I do. This morning I woke up with a brief moment of fright thinking, oh no.
Wait a minute.
Are the students in the lobby right now waiting for me to come get them?
Could you give me a little bit about your own personal backgrounds that brought you here so that maybe I could tack that on at the start?
Presenting Dr. Chris Vanex.
Okay, so I started off, I got a bachelor's degree in geology from the University of Georgia. I stayed at the University of Georgia for my master's and went over to crop and soil sciences. So I studied soil science, which is where I started to focus on geophysics for exploring environmental processes. From there, I went and did my PhD at the University of Sydney, where I got more into hydrology and applied geophysics. In this case, I was using geophysics to measure hydrological processes, in particular how water flows through the upper soil, or the upper 5 meters of soil.
So you have a lot of those groundwater answers, I guess.
I do.
Or questions.
I do the shallow groundwater stuff, mm-hmm. Yeah. The nice thing about geophysics is you can do a lot of hand waving, and it works really well.
I have to interject something. I don't know if you remember this conversation we were having one day. I don't remember what started it, but Chris was talking about how there's deep geology and there's shallow geology, and Chris is shallow.
I'm a shallow geologist. I'm definitely a shallow geologist. The really deep stuff. I don't have large enough hands to wave around. station there.
Presenting Dr. Angela Eads.
I got a bachelor's degree in science from Millsaps College, a small liberal arts college in Jackson, Mississippi, and then came directly from college to grad school, and I actually came to Vanderbilt for grad school, and I was in the PhD program called the Interdisciplinary Graduate Program, and after that I chose to join the Department of Molecular Physiology and Biophysics, and got my degree under Marshall Sommer, where we worked with human genetics and molecular biology. And because I liked Nashville and Vanderbilt so much, I decided not to leave and instead find a job where I could take my science and knowledge and do something educational that was not research.
Great. Are you glad about the decision? I'll edit that out.
Are you glad about the decision? I'm sure you'll edit yours out.
Well, I always sound a lot smarter and talk a lot faster than I do. So are you glad about the decision you made?
Yes, absolutely. So far.
That's good.
Presenting Dr. Kimberly McCune.
I went to a small college in northwest Missouri, Missouri Western State College, and actually got a bachelor's degree in education, major in biology, minor in chemistry, and from there went into teaching in public high school, which I did for many years, always with the intent that I would go back to graduate school. And so after 6 years, that's what I did, and went to the University of Missouri in Columbia to get my PhD. And following on that, I went and worked in my field of study, which was ecology and conservation. And so I worked for many years as a conservation biologist, and specifically with plants, and working to preserve rare and endangered plant species in the Midwest of the United States. But I always, you know, obviously had education in my background, and I saw the program being advertised here at Vanderbilt, and it's just so unique. And I thought, you know, I can do that, to come and work with other PhD scientists who've worked in the field, but then bringing that expertise and sharing it with exceptional high school students is just a really exciting thing to do.
Very
and
cool.
So that's how I ended up here in Nashville at Vanderbilt.
Well, I've had the privilege of watching you all work, and it's been a privilege just to be able to be a fly on the wall in your lab. So, looking forward to more of that in the future. The applications just went out, I think, last week?
Last week? Due February 6th or February 8th?
Early February.
Due early February.
We'll see how well word of mouth generates response. I know last year, I think they had something like 250 applications they had to weed through for those 25
spots. I bet there's going to be more. I mean, we've heard anecdotes from people that, you know, siblings of our students, they want to get in the program, so they're working really hard so that their grades will be good enough and things like that. And also kids out there who've heard of it by other means, even though they aren't eligible to apply this year, they're working really hard so that when it does come their time, that they'll have a good chance of getting in. There is a buzz.
Well, it's a worthwhile program, and you know, one that can be replicated elsewhere. I want to do another set of interviews with Jenny and Glenn, and the people who put the whole thing together from ground level, because it's a pretty interesting saga that it came from just concept to being in a relatively short period of time.
An amazingly short period of time.
Snacks for the Brain is brought to you by the fine folks at the Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach, connecting working research scientists with K-12 students worldwide.
Check out the website at scienceoutreach.org.
Outreach Radio.
Hey, that's it from episode number 67. I hope you enjoyed hearing from Drs. Vonnegut, McHugh, and Eads half as much as I enjoyed talking with them. They're certainly the ones who make it all work. Hey, join us for number 68, y'all, as we continue to explore the bleeding edge of science outreach, the hidden treasures of independent music, and the boundaries and new frontiers of education in the 21st century. You are the ones I count on. Here's Cargo Cult leading you out with more Magnitude.com electronica. This one called, guess what? One. See ya.
See ya.
listen to what we want to listen to. We want to listen to this.
Daddy, what's a podcast?
Well, son, a podcast is something you listen to because you want to listen to it, when you want to listen to it, not because some broadcast radio station says you have to tune in at a certain time. You can listen to it on your desktop computer. You can listen to it on your laptop computer. You can listen to it on your iPod, your iRiver, your iWhatever. But you listen to it because you want to listen to it, not because it's what happens to be on. That, my son, is what a podcast is.